You're listening to DTFHN for August 8th, 2026. And you're reverse engineered from the outside host, Jack Haxman. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News. A website with the comments is worth more than the article. Today is about what you can only learn by taking the thing apart yourself and what it costs when nobody's allowed to. Let's pry the lid off. The comments got there before the headline did. Someone flagged it immediately. This is a VXC3 processor, and the C3 shipped in the early 2000s. Another commenter went further. Not a backdoor, a documented feature, and that distinction is where the actual story lives. Stripped of first principles, what is Rosenbridge mechanically? Christopher Domus found a second processor core sitting inside the x86 die. Not a coprocessor in the sense of the management engine. That's a separate chip with its own firmware running alongside. This is deeper. An x86 core wired into the main core's register file and execution pipeline. You enable it by flipping a bit in a model-specific register. Then you fire a launch instruction. Then you feed it commands wrapped inside what looks, to any disassembler, like ordinary x86 bytes. Those commands execute with no privilege checks and no memory protection. Ring 3 code reads and writes kernel memory directly. The requirement, on paper, is ring 0 access to turn it on. Domus found systems where it shipped enable. Here's the part worth sitting with. He found it by fuzzing. The tool is called Sand Sifter, and it does something almost stupid in its simplicity. It walks the x86 instruction space, byte pattern by byte pattern, and watches for instructions that execute but aren't documented. The processor tells on itself. Undocumented behavior has a signature, and if you look at enough of the space, you find it. That's the whole method. Open tooling, published on GitHub, that anyone can point at their own silicon. The assembler for the hidden instruction set is in the repo. The privilege escalation proof of concept is in the repo. The mitigation script is in the repo. You can clone it right now and check your own CPU. Compare the alternative. The commenter noted that the Rosenbridge white paper couldn't be public. It would constitute a specification of V's proprietary technology. The documentation exists. It's just not for you. So, the path to knowing what your own processor does ran through a researcher writing a fuzzer and brute forcing the instruction space from the outside. The scope is narrow. C3 chips in point-of-sale terminals, ATMs, industrial controllers, some healthcare hardware. Later generations dropped the feature. But another commenter made the connection that matters. Chip complexity is climbing, and the least documented silicon in your machine right now is the accelerator. The TPU, the GPU sand sifter still works. Pointed at something new. Speaking of undocumented hardware, okay, let me try that again. Undocumented silicon is one kind of hidden machine. Here's another, a hamster wheel with a physicist attached to it. How much of what your body does at night are you even aware of? Daze the Buck is an MRI physicist in Utrecht. He wanted to know one thing. How far does his hamster run after the lights go out? Molly is 10 months old. The answer turned out to be about 10 kilometers a night. Personal record, 10.8. The first attempt was a cheap bicycle computer. Magnet, sensor, same physics. It failed for a hamster-specific reason. The unit drops into standby after 5 minutes of stillness. As DeBuck put it, if Molly took a lunch break at 1 in the morning, the rest of the night was gone, so he built the thing properly. A magnet on the wheel. a Hall sensor watching it pass, and ESP32 logging rotations through the night. In the morning, a script on his laptop pulls the data, converts it to a FIT file, and pushes it through the Strava API. There's an OLED showing live speed. There's automated personal best detection. There are over 100 generated run titles, including The Fast and The Furious. Every component in that stack is something you can order for the price of lunch and program with documentation that's free to read. The ESP32 is the reason this story exists in the form it does. A Hall sensor is a few cents. The tool chain is open. A physicist in the Netherlands had a question about an animal in his home, and the distance between question and instrument was one weekend. Look at the comments and you see the pattern hold. Someone built the same rig for a cat's exercise wheel. Hackaday covered it. Someone else built a bike computer for his daughter with an ESP32 and a reed switch, and programmed it to play a Back to the Future clip when she hits 8.8 miles per hour. A neuroscientist noted in passing that mice logging 10 kilometers overnight is ordinary in the literature. The instrument is now cheap enough that the answer arrives at a kid's handlebars, not just a lab bench. One detail deserves naming. Automated uploads require Strava Premium. The sensor is open. The microcontroller is open. The file format is documented. The last 2 feet, putting your own data into your own account, is behind a subscription. Molly is a paying customer. Two builds in a row where the hardware is free and the last mile costs money. Story 3 flips that script entirely. Pause, DeepSeek V4 flash, and it's a joy. The counter-argument writes itself. And it's strong. Benchmarks are not intelligence. OCGI is a puzzle suite, and puzzle suites get gamed. You train on the shape of the thing. You post a number. The number means less than it looks like. Add that DeepSeek runs semi-private evaluation, so you're trusting a process you can't fully audit. And add the loudest comment in the thread. Someone running this on an agent harness watched it fall into infinite loops, talking to itself, burning tokens without executing a single tool call. 89% on a leaderboard, 0% on the actual job. All of that is true. None of it survives the price column. 2 cents per task on ARC, a game I won. 4 cents on ARC, a game I too. 61.4% at max effort on a benchmark built specifically to resist the pattern matching that made the first one tractable. 3 reasoning variants, and the low setting still clears 46%. Meaning the cheap tier of a cheap model does work that a year and a half ago cost dollars per task from a frontier lab. The loop bug is a harness integration problem. The price is a physics problem, and they solved the physics problem. There's a specific precedent. 1991, Linus Torvalds post-to-comp.os.minix about a hobby project. Won't be big and professional like NIU. The serious objection at the time was correct on the merits. Monolithic kernel, no formal design, and amateur against Bell Labs and Carnegie Mellon. Andrew Tenenbaum said as much in 1992 in public, and he wasn't being unreasonable, he was measuring architecture. What he wasn't measuring was the cost of participation. Linux won because anyone with a modem could compile it, break it, and mail back a patch. Same variable here. Multiple people in that thread report running V4 flash locally. Waits on their own hardware. No API, no rate limit, no terms of service. One says it's good enough for almost everything and cheap enough that cost is irrelevant. Another says its blind spots differ from Claude's, so flipping between them catches errors neither catches alone. That's only possible because one of the two lets you hold it in your hands. DeepSeek has announced a significant price increase. Doesn't matter much. The weights that shipped on July 31st are already out there. Already downloaded. Already running on somebody's rack. You can raise the price of an API. You cannot raise the price of a file that's already on the internet. The economics of open weights just got a very large new player because the U.S. Department of Energy is putting models on the table. August 14th, that's a deadline on the contribution portal. 6 days from now, the Department of Energy is asking universities, national labs, and companies to hand over curated scientific datasets, evaluations, and technical expertise for a foundation model called Genesis Science 1, and the window to raise your hand closes in under a week. For a program meant to galvanize an entire scientific community, that's a remarkably narrow door. Set the timeline aside, though, because the substance here is real. Open weights, transparent provenance. Their words written into the requirements, models built for materials discovery, fusion, earth systems, high energy physics. The first one is a partnership with RC, a company most people outside the fine-tuning world have never heard of, which is itself a signal. This isn't a frontier lab coronation. The DOE is treating model weights as public infrastructure, the way it treats a beamline or a supercomputer. You don't rent time on Argonne's telescope through an API with a terms of service clause. You apply, you use it, you publish. And one commenter put their finger on why this matters right now. There are essentially no American open models left. Llama was abandoned. What remains is Gemma. GPTOS. And Marathi's Inkling under Apache 2.0. That's the entire domestic open weight ecosystem. The country that funded the internet, funded GPS, funded the Human Genome Project. The country whose research agencies have been the single greatest engine of open technology in human history has almost nothing to show in the one category that matters most right now. The DOE noticed. Somebody at Argonne looked at the landscape and concluded that if industry won't ship open weights, a national lab will. So, here's the question nobody in the announcement wants to ask directly. Who does this compete with? Not China's labs. Those weights are already free, already downloaded, already running. The competitor is domestic. It's the American frontier labs that decided openness was a phase they'd grown out of. A government agency is now positioned to out-open the private sector. Another commenter asked whether Europe has an equivalent program. Good question. Also, the pressure this creates. If national labs start shipping open weights for science, the argument that frontier capability requires closed doors gets a lot harder to make with a straight face. 6 days. If you have data, go raise your hand. Now something completely different and a lot more physical. Story 5. I built a system once that would silently retry a failing upload until it succeeded, and I thought that was elegant until I watched it hammer a dead endpoint 11,000 times overnight. The logic was perfect. The objective function was wrong. Nobody had told it what it was actually optimizing for. Amazon is building a data center in Mississippi County, Arkansas, and the gas plant powering it is projected to be the single largest industrial emitter in the United States. Not the largest data center emitter, the largest. Full stop. Now, one commenter made a point worth taking seriously. That headline measures absolute output, not intensity, per megawatt. It's an ordinary combined cycle gas turbine. It's enormous because the load is enormous. That's a real correction, and it deserves to be said out loud. But it doesn't dissolve the question. It sharpens it. Someone asked why gas instead of solar. If solar's the cheapest electricity on the planet, the answer is genuinely interesting engineering. Training runs need firm power. Constant, dispatchable, 24 hours, no weather. Solar plus storage can get there. The physics works. The cost curve is bending hard. But it needs land, interconnection queues, and time. Gas turbines are available now. This is a procurement decision dressed as a physics constraint. Here's the architecture question. Who decides what that gas plant runs for? Not you, not the county. A capital allocation committee optimizing for time to model. The plant is a closed system attached to a closed system. Proprietary weights. Trained on private compute, powered by dedicated generation, nobody else can touch. Every layer of that stack is single controller. Compare it to what open weights do to the same energy math. Train once, download infinitely. DeepSeek's models get run on hardware that already exists. In racks that are already cooled, by people who never had to build a power plant. Frictionless copying is the most energy-efficient thing in computing. Every closed model is a training run that has to be repeated in private by each competitor who wants one. That's not one gas plant. That's the same gas plant five times, because nobody will share the result. The answer isn't fewer data centers. It's fewer redundant training runs and faster clean interconnection. Both of those are engineering problems with people already working on them. Run this forward. Open weights are climate technology. That's not a stretch. It's just arithmetic. Remember that gas plant arithmetic? Here's a different kind of math. What happens when a whole profession stops believing the numbers add up for them? Story 6. Two knitting needles and a mound of pink yarn pulled out of a leather bag on a commuter train by a man who had just spent 35 minutes saying the word EBITDA into his AirPods. Aaron Horwat watched it happen, sitting across from him at one of those four-person tables. The hat was for a niece, and that was the first moment all morning, the guy looked like he was actually there. Orwad's a piece in Noma is about what he's hearing from everyone around him. Not layoff panic, not resume anxiety, something stranger. Senior people, well-paid people, the ones with decades of institutional knowledge and every reason to feel safe, quietly wondering whether the thing they've been doing for 20 years was ever load-bearing at all. Pottery, goat farms, surf instruction in Costa Rica. The escape fantasies are getting oddly specific. Now run this forward with some rigor. If a language model can produce a deck that's indistinguishable from the one a person spent a week on, the model didn't destroy that work. It revealed what the work was. That's a measurement, not a demolition. And the measurement is arriving for a category of labor that has never been measured before, because knowledge work's whole trick was that nobody could tell from the outside whether the thinking was real. A commenter on Hacker News points at printers. Typesetting. A genuine skilled trade with centuries behind it, dissolved inside a decade. But here's what happened to the printers who came out the other side. Some of them became the people who make things. Desktop publishing put a press in every apartment. The trade collapsed, and the capability spread. That's the fork, if the capability lands in everyone's hands. Weights you can download, tools you can run on hardware you already own. The knitting guy becomes someone who ships. If it lands behind an API that three companies price at whatever the market will bear, he stays on the train, reading EBITDA numbers to a model that's already generated them. Another commenter says something I keep turning over. In the 90s, people went online to escape offline. Now they go offline to escape online. That's not nostalgia. That's a person looking for a loop where the output is theirs. The hat exists. Someone will wear it. That's a complete circuit. And it's worth noticing how rare that's become. And how many more of them are suddenly buildable? Earlier I said the tools exist and the knowledge is available. Assembly Hall of Shame is the other half of that. Pause. People building in the open where you can see every seam. In U2AE, a newsletter called DTAC Grounded ran on a simple premise. The Motorola 6808 waits for a data transfer acknowledge signal before it finishes a memory cycle. Tie that line low permanently and the processor stops waiting. Fast memory. No wait states. No negotiation. The whole hobbyist board scene grew out of pinning one handshake to the floor. The Assembly Hall of Shame is the same handshake held in the opposite direction. Never acknowledge. The current record holder is an AMD Ryzen 7588-800 executing a single FUP section shortcode SA4. Instruction loads 512 bytes of floating point state. Point it at a high latency region in the PCIe fabric. Then set every other core hammering a different high latency register with 4-byte reads. Non-posted transactions, meaning each one requires a response. The root complex saturates. CPU zeros load queues behind all of it. 198 billion cycles, 62 seconds. One instruction. Now the objection, which is a real one. This is a curiosity cabinet. Instruction latency work exists to make code faster, and inverting the objective produces nothing shippable. Nobody profiles for the slow path. The leaderboard opens with NOP scoring one cycle, which tells you the register here is comedy, except the honorable mention section links to a companion repository, and that's where the argument collapses. A spec-violating unaligned means load, pulling DORDs from stalled GPU registers, was used to break system management mode. SMM is the highest privilege ring on the machine. Firmware code, invisible to your kernel, invisible to your hypervisor. Its security model assumes that when an interrupt fires, the processor gets there in bounded time. Stretch one instruction across 60 seconds and the assumption stops holding. The distinction that matters is who is permitted to know this. SMM is closed firmware. The latency behavior of a PCIe root complex under non-posted saturation is not in any data sheet you can download. Domas measured it from outside, published the measurement, and published the tooling. The same author wrote a compiler that emits only move instructions, which was also treated as a joke until people understood what it implied about obfuscation. A commenter proposes building a loop into the X7 six-page tables. Another notes that any bus with a handshake and no timeout can hang forever by construction. These are people reasoning about hardware they were never given documentation for, in public, with receipts. The leaderboard is the funny part. The methodology is the point. Those hardware detectives had no documentation and figured it out anyway. Story 8 is the opposite gift. Pause. Europe just handed everyone the satellite data. Free and wildfire tracking got a whole lot better. A wildfire is a problem in three variables. And only one of them is visible to your eye. There's combustion, which emits. There's vegetation, which is either alive or dead. and their soil moisture, which determines whether the ground will burn again next week. Look at a fire with a normal camera, and you get one variable. Smeared across the other two, the smoke is the noise, the fire is the signal. Sentinel R solves this the way a doctor solves a diagnosis, not by looking harder, but by ordering different tests. 3 satellites, multispectral imaging, 10-meter resolution in visible and near-infrared. Each spectral band answers one question. Red visible light gives you the scene. Narrow near-infrared distinguishes healthy chlorophyll from dead cellulose. Plants reflect it hard when they're alive and stop when they're not. Shortwave infrared 2 reads water content, so it sees through to how dry the soil underneath actually is. Combine those 3 channels into a false color composite, and you get an image where active fire renders white or yellow, burning vegetation renders red, and burned landscape renders dark brown to black. Same photons, different arithmetic. That arithmetic is a JavaScript script written by a remote sensing expert named Pierre Marcuse nearly a decade ago. On August 4th, it became a default visualization layer in the Copernicus browser, alongside 10 others available to anyone with a browser and no login gate on the site. The gap between those two facts is the story. The capability existed for years. The satellites were flying. The data was free. The band math was published and correct. What was missing was one click. A person evacuating a valley, a local reporter. A volunteer firefighter coordinating on a group chat. None of them were going to write a custom band combination against a raw multispectral archive. Now they select wildfires and see where the burn scar ends. The European Space Agency operates Constellation. Marcuse wrote the interpretation. Copernicus shipped it as a button. No single actor could have done that alone. And none of them had to negotiate for permission. Free imagery is not the same as usable imagery. The distance between them is measured in defaults. Somebody closed that distance this week, and people whose houses are near a fire line are better informed because of it. Now for something completely different. Before a way look processor rebuilt gate by gate in Verilog. Story 9. A commenter shows up under this project and says, essentially, nice core, but Z386 is where the action is now. And then adds an aside that turns out to be the whole story. This core doesn't output a proper analog signal, not a bug, a consequence. Here's the claim A04PL6 makes. A Verilog core implementing all features of a 486SX. Take that literally. Follow it all the way down. If you have described a processor completely in hardware description language, then software cannot tell the difference, because there is no difference left to detect. And Alfeek proved it the hard way. Modeled and tested the core against Box, the software X86 implementation, instruction by instruction. Every 486 opcode, CPUID, a 4-stage pipeline, decode, read, execute, write, 16 kilobytes of instruction cache, 16 kilobytes of write-back data cache. A 32-entry TLB, because protected mode paging is not optional if you want to boot anything real. And it boots Linux 3.13 and Windows 95. But a 4-baud Linux was never a chip alone. It was a chip in a room full of other chips. And every one of them had to be there. So the project ships an 8259 interrupt controller, an 8237 DMA engine, an 8254 timer, an 8042 keyboard controller, a real-time clock, a floppy controller, an IDE drive that quietly redirects to an SD card, standard VGA, and a sound blaster, 2.0 with OPL2 FM synthesis. The sound block alone burns 37,000 logic cells. More than the CPU. The whole ASOC lands at 80% of a Cyclone 4. Maximum frequency, 39 MHz. Runs at 30. Now take the principle to its edge. If the goal is a faithful 486, the video output should be an analog VGA signal shaped by an analog clock. And it isn't, because the FPGA's PLL cannot hit the exact dot clock. The principle breaks precisely where physics stops being logic. That's not a failure of the work. That's the work finding its own boundary and telling you where it is. L5 shipped this in March 2014. BSD licensed RTL and simulation and tooling included. Every core that came after. Zsymbolyo among them. Gotta start from a working, readable, legally unencumbered 486. 12 years later, people are still building on it. That is what publishing your gates buys you. So what happens when the hardware you can't republish is 11 billion miles away and running out of power? What does it mean for a machine to age well? Voyager 2 launched in 1977. Its power source is a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. Plutonium decaying into heat, heat converted into electricity, no moving parts, no refueling, beautiful in its simplicity and utterly indifferent to your feelings about it. The plutonium decays at the rate the plutonium decays. Roughly 4 watts a year. Gone. That's not an engineering problem you can solve. That's physics handing you a budget and walking away. Strip it to first principles. You have a fixed and shrinking energy supply. You have thermal requirements because at 142 astronomical units, the ambient temperature is essentially nothing, and cold hardware stops working. You have 3 surviving science instruments out of the 10 it launched with. Every watt you spend keeping the spacecraft warm is a watt you cannot spend on measurement. The entire mission is now a resource allocation exercise. Run at a distance where the answer to any question takes 2 days to arrive. And the team found something. They shut off non-essential devices, moved heating to what NASA calls lower power alternatives. A change they nicknamed the Big Bang. And bought back enough margin that an instrument scheduled to die this year gets to keep reporting. All 3 stay on for at least another year. Voyager 1 gets the same treatment in the coming months. I want to be precise about what happened here, because there's a version of this that sounds like sentiment and isn't. Nobody touched that spacecraft. They wrote a command, sent it across nearly 24 light hours, and it landed on hardware designed with slide rule era margins, by people who mostly are not at JPL anymore. It worked because the original engineers documented what they built, and because the current team could read it. One commenter points to Voyager 1's 2023 memory corruption fix. Reverse engineered and patched from 15 billion miles away. Same principle. Legible systems stay repairable. That's the thread. The gap between a product and an instrument is whether anyone can still understand it in 48 years. Voyager is the longest running proof we have that documentation is a form of life support. The tools exist. The knowledge is available. Run this forward. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for August 8, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI generated. Scripts by Claude Sonnet, 4.7. Voice by Quen3, TTS. Not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now, go take something apart and write down what you find. We'll see you back here tomorrow.